This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Today's podcast is sponsored by The Morning Navigator, a daily newsletter written by Tony Greer, who is a 30-year veteran trader in the financial markets. I think it's important to be responsible with your personal finances and investments, and it's hard to do that without understanding the markets. Now, this is where The Morning Navigator fills a specific need for me. If you're looking for actionable trade ideas or simply to educate yourself about the markets, then The Morning Navigator will help you to do both. It's an interesting, informative, and amusing daily read. Now, a subscription to The Morning Navigator normally costs $60 a month or $650 per year. However, my listeners can go to tgmacro.com, sign up for a free one-week trial, and apply the code ZUBY, Z-U-B-Y, at checkout for a discount of either $10 off the $60 a month subscription or $100 off the $650 annual subscription. As you can infer, the annual subscription is a better deal. Either one is a win when it comes to understanding the global markets and managing your personal investments. So once again, you can sign up today for a free trial at tgmacro.com. tgmacro.com. Go check it out.
I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram, stunting you're destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam, put some respect on my name. Sick like a bang, click and I bang.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls around the world? I would like to welcome you back to the Real Talk with Zuby podcast. Now, on today's episode, we are going to be talking about fitness. We're going to be talking about functional fitness. We're going to be talking about nutrition. We're going to be talking about body weight training. And who better to do that with than with my friend, Jerry Teixeira. Welcome to the show.
What's going on, Zuby?
I'm all blessed, bro. How are you?
Good, man. Good. I'm alive, so can't complain.
Yeah, man. Every day is a blessing. So yep. I've done a super brief intro right there, man. But let the people know a little bit more about who you are.
So I've been involved in being physically active in fitness since, I guess I was 18. I went into the Marine Corps and obviously very physical culture. And then when I got out, I continued to lift. I went to basically, you know, normal gym like most people would. Mm-hmm. And after about 5 years of getting out of the Marine Corps, we had a child, my wife and I, and the first year and a half after we had a kid, it was extremely challenging to get to the gym, just because life changed and I got pretty fat. And so I was 50 pounds overweight, like a 40-inch waist, at 5'8". And I'd never had a problem with my weight until that happened. And so, what I ended up doing was finally getting back to the gym, you know, dialing everything down, losing weight over time. But I continued to train just like standard weight training, like most people would think of when you think about fitness. And then 10 years after my daughter was born, we had our second child, which was my son. And going into it, I already knew I was probably going to have a hard time getting to the gym from past experience.
Okay.
And so I decided I was going to train at home. And that way I would still be able to keep my routine and not have the same thing happen to me that happened the first time around. But when I decided I was going to train at home, I was also feeling kind of burned out with just so many years of going to the gym. And so I decided that I wanted to try to do more of a body weight approach. And what spurred me to think that I could do that was my daughter at this point, we put her in gymnastics and she was in gymnastics for 7 years at this point. Okay. And so she had become competitive and moving up the level. So I was exposed to some higher level gymnastics, you know, male and female athletes and coaches, and they have incredible physiques. and they don't lift. Mm. And so I kind of thought to myself, I wonder if I could obviously not do like high level gymnastics or anything like that, but looking at their conditioning and their strength training, I thought, man, I wonder if I can get into that type of calisthenics and, you know, basically train at home that way for a while, and then eventually go back to traditional lifting. Mm-hmm. And so what I found is I basically planned out what I was going to do and I bought a bunch of books, blogs, you know, YouTube. I basically learned as much as I could in anticipation of my son being born. And then I canceled my gym membership and started training at home with progressive body weight. And the thing that happened for me, at least, is that it was just really fun and it was a new challenge. Yeah. And so when I did that, I found myself really enjoying the training and not wanting to go back to the gym. And so that is kind of where I devoted myself to, you know, the body weight strength methodology versus going back to traditional lifting. But I always try to make clear to people, I don't think it's better than a standard gym. Mm-hmm. It basically, physical activity and building strength in whatever manner you choose is hugely beneficial.
Yeah.
And so what I try to teach people or make people realize is that when I was in the Marine Corps, we did calisthenics to build endurance. It was not thought of as strength training.
Sure.
Right? You do build a small amount of strength, but, and so that was my mentality toward it. And then much later, when I looked at gymnasts, I realized they take body weight training or calisthenics and they do it as a methodology to build strength. Mm. So you can build real strength without weights, or you can use it to build endurance. But for most people, when they think about body weight training, they think about endurance. They think P90X or insanity.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't look at it as a way to build strength. And so that's kind of what the core of my content is, teaching people to use it to actually build real functional strength, not endurance, so to speak.
Awesome. Awesome. So now with your training, are you now 100% body weight training now?
Yeah, I've been since
it all.
When my son was born, I switched to basically the calisthenics based stuff.
Okay.
And I have a buddy that we work together a couple days a week. And on the days we work together, I would go hit a quick workout after work and then come home. And that was for a couple months after my son was born. And then we stopped working together and I dropped it at that point. So it's been four and a half years or so. Mm-hmm. I've been eyeing some kettlebells. But the thing is, for me at least, I can't do an iron cross yet. I have a straddle planche, not a full planche. If anybody's curious about those, you can Google them. But they're very advanced body weight strength elements.
I mean, one thing that's really been interesting, of course, as we're recording this video, we are on coronavirus lockdown. So a lot of people, including myself, don't have gym access right now. So it's been interesting for me, because one thing I've learned, and this has been super duper humbling, and this is that I suck at body weight training. Right. Someone might like see me. I mean, compared to, you know, the average totally sedentary person, right? Some of the stuff I can do probably looks somewhat impressive, but especially with like the lower body stuff, like I cannot do a pistol squat. I was attempting to do them this morning. I was like, holy crap. My body was just getting fried by trying to do these movements that it never really done before. You know, it's just like totally different movement patterns. So one interesting thing I'm already learning is, one, you know, that sort of level of humility, because you get to a certain level of strength doing certain movements and certain exercises, but that doesn't mean that it's necessarily going to carry over to something that you haven't done before. But also just thinking like, you know what, lots of this stuff I want to start incorporating into my, you know, normal training. Like I love lifting weights, I love pumping iron, that's not going to stop. But
Right. Okay,
I should certainly be supplementing some of this with more of these exercises, because I'm kind of like, man, at the level of strength and, you know, number of training years I have under my belt, some of these movements I should really be able to do. So during this lockdown period, I myself am going to be, you know, trying to hit some of these things properly. So I've been learning the progressions, going back a few steps, and it's interesting because it's a little bit like being a complete noob again.
Yeah, that's honestly what appealed to me was a deadlift is a deadlift for 20 years, no matter how long you train for. A bench press is a bench press. And you progressively, and we can dig into this, but you progressively overload in your training if you want to keep making progress. Right? You have to be either adding another 2.5 pounds or 5 pounds or whatever the case is over time. But I started to get where I felt like when I was going to the gym, and I probably similar to you, where I really do like my training time, mm-hmm. because with wife and kids and everything else, that's my me time. I don't want gym partners. I don't like working out with people on a regular basis.
Same.
It's like my sanctuary, you know, mm-hmm. but I was getting to where I still needed that time, but I wasn't enjoying the actual lifting as much anymore. Not that I didn't want the exercise, but I was kind of stagnant. And so when I made the switch to calisthenics, like you're saying, I was terrible. I looked at, dude, I sucked. Yeah. And I wasn't weak, you know? And so I'm like Googling these guys. I'm looking at gymnasts and I'm like, holy crap, how in the hell? Like I'm looking at, and not, again, not doing flips or any of the skills. I'm talking about basic strength elements in gymnastics. These guys are doing these things on rings, mm. or they're doing like these handstands. And I'm thinking, dude, that's insane. Mm. Like, and I was so far away from being able to do any of that, that I think something about just being the type of individual where I like a challenge.
Yeah.
I was like, dude, I'm terrible. So I'm going to not be terrible at this. And so the challenge of it is like, I could barely do a one arm push up and it was disgusting looking.
I'm trying to hit that now. Like I'd never even attempted it before. That's the thing.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? I almost like just assumed with like, okay, I can bench this muscle. I can probably do a one arm push up. And then I was like, I should try it. And then it's like, you know, fall face first on the ground. I'm like, holy, like physiologically, I know I have the strength to do it. Right.
Right. It's exactly.
Absence of strength. Even it's just like, my body is not trained for this pattern. Like I've just never, ever done this before. Like my chest is strong enough. My core is strong enough, but I need to learn how to balance myself and how to just learn this motor pattern.
Exactly. It's that that neuromuscular adaptation that has to happen. And that's why if you're listening to this and you're somebody who has a history of physical training, then you will be able to make the adaptations more quickly. Because to your point, it's not that your muscles aren't strong enough. It's that you just are not used to training that particular pattern. Mm. And so your progress will probably come more quickly than somebody who has not trained in the past. But there's definitely a fun factor that I think, just to give you an example, most people have not done a handstand since they were 10 years old or 9 years old or whatever.
Yeah.
And so when you decide, okay, I'm going to try a handstand, there's just something kind of fun about, or like a pistol squat, right? So you're like, oh, I'm going to try this fall over. And you're like, what the heck?
You're describing my morning.
But then there's something in your brain that kind of clicks and you're like, I could do this. Like, yeah. I'm going to do this, you know? Yeah. So if you're stuck, which most people are on some type of quarantine right now, I think that now more than ever, some type of physical training is super important just because, you know, we, whether you believe we were created or evolved or whatever, we've been a physical species for as long as we've been here.
Yeah.
And so when you can barely leave your house, you are most likely less physical than at any point ever. Mm. And so I think it's super important to add back, or make sure you add in some kind of activity. And I think right now it's everybody's routines. If your routine was the gym every morning or every evening or whatever, or 3 days a week, mm-hmm. that's all out the window.
Yep.
And so what I think is cool is if you just say, okay, I'm going to do a bunch of push-ups and then a bunch of bodyweight squats, it can get really boring very quickly.
Yes.
And so, you know, I mean, I could do it. I think I stopped because I got so bored. I did like 70 something squats for a video once.
Okay.
And it was like 7 minutes. I'm still squatting after 7 minutes.
Yeah.
And it was to illustrate a point. Now, if I go do a pistol squat, even if you can't do a pistol squat, you can use your hands to hold on to something to stabilize you and do an assisted single leg squat.
Which is still hard, by the way.
Dude, it's brutal. Most people will fail at 5 or 6.
Yeah.
And so that's my whole point, is that you can scale body weight training to be, rather than a 70 squat endurance session, mm-hmm. you can scale it to where you're failing at 7 per leg, for example.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing with pushups or with whatever else. So if you're missing the gym and you're itching to get back, but this is going to go on for however long it's going to go on for, I encourage you to look at scaling the intensity of what you're doing, because number one, it will be more effective from a strength building standpoint. But number two, you're probably going to suck at it and it's going to click and you're going to think, oh, okay, I got a challenge. I could do this. And at least for the next 6 weeks or whatever, however long this lasts for, at least you have something that calls to you to get better at.
Yep.
Versus just doing the regular push-ups, which they're fine. But just doing regular push-ups, it just gets boring. And that's one of the complaints I hear from people, like, okay, I'm doing 100 squats and 100 push-ups and 100 whatever. And there's just no, you know, when you set your mind on, I'm going to bench 315 and you've got this goal. Mm. So if you're just doing a bunch of push-ups and regular bodyweight squats, there's just not a goal. You're just going through the motions for most people. So,
And also once, you know, and if you're a, you know, intermediate or advanced athlete, it also, it's interesting for me. It's been interesting for me sort of seeing that, seeing the sort of jump. So like, you know, push-ups, it's like, yeah, I can knock out a good number of push-ups or whatever. Like that's not a challenge. But then, you know, I started trying doing the, you know, having one hand elevated, one hand on the floor and, you know, moving that out. And it was like, okay, I'm starting to like feel that properly now, right? I can't just keep going and going and going. And then, you know, eventually, you know, I plan to eventually get to the one arm ones and everything. And yeah, it's been interesting just having to totally rethink things differently and see, oh, okay, like you can do all of these bodyweight squats. Like maybe you can knock out, I don't know, 100 plus bodyweight squats, but can you do one pistol squat? Right. And I learned for myself, the answer is no. Right. Cause as soon as I tried it, I was like, I was watching videos online of people doing it. I was like, oh, okay. Like, you know, you watch it and it looks relatively easy. And then you try to do it and you kind of reach that halfway point and your body's just like, nope. If you go any lower, you are going to fall over, and you try to go lower, boom, fall over. I've got like a new appetite for the challenge in a way, because it's like, okay, well, I'm being forced into this now. Like I don't have a choice. Like I gotta do something. I'm going to stay in shape. So I now have like new targets. Like, okay, by the time this whole thing is over, I want to be able to do this movement. I want to be able to do that movement. And then I plan to sort of incorporate that even when I do start going back to hit the gym again.
Yeah. And that, to your point, there are certain body weight strength elements that would round out a traditional. So even if your plan is to go back and you're going to do mostly loaded barbell, dumbbell work or whatever, there are certain things, and you can even load them. So for example, a Cossack squat or a side to side squat
also
is, yeah, but they're really, really good for opening up the hips, for the adductors. And so you can use those. And I think they're awesome to do pre or even after, depending on, but for your lower body training, for your squat sessions, hanging leg raises are amazing for the whole anterior chain, for the core. Mm-hmm. And so there's certain movements that even if you were to program if you had a full gym and you had all the equipment and you can have access to everything, there are certain body weight strength elements that I think, okay, program these things in there and they're still going to benefit you and help you improve at your traditional lifting. Because I think what happens is oftentimes we have all this equipment that we have access to. And so people basically, everything they program then involves equipment of some type. Mm-hmm. They completely jettison.
Yes.
You see what I mean? It's almost like, okay, how am I going to use dumbbells, barbells? How am I going to use this stuff? Mm-hmm. And there's literally zero movements. Even instead of pull-ups, it's lat pull-downs. And there's a place for lat pull-downs. There's a place for every exercise.
Sure.
But a lat pull-down is not as good as a properly performed pull-up.
No.
When you start trying these different movements and you realize that you can't perform them, there's number one, the neuromuscular adaptation has to happen from practicing a movement. Mm. But number two, sometimes you find that you do have a weakness you didn't realize you had.
Yeah.
So maybe you're super fit, but you go, oh man, the rotational torque on my core, my core is actually not where as strong as I think it is. Mm. So maybe that's what's holding you back. Or a lot of times, you know, maybe you have in your case with your deadlift, I'm sure this isn't the case, but maybe your glutes aren't as strong as they should be. Mm. Or sometimes not being able to perform a specific movement, it can hint at mobility issues. A lot of people have poor shoulder mobility and they don't realize it. Mm. So, or poor hip mobility. So in a traditional weight training environment, you don't often have to be able to move yourself through the same positions that you do for some of these body weight strength movements. And so a lot of people don't realize, man, my hamstrings are a lot tight. Because people will tell me, hey, how come I can't do this pistol? Or how come I can't do it? And I'll look at the video and I'm like, dude, your hams are super tight. Or, you know, you've got to open up your hips. And they're like, oh, I didn't realize I'm strong enough, but it's a mobility issue. Mm. So, you know, during this time when you're down, whether it's shoulder mobility, hip mobility, if you're working on this stuff, try to, I hate the mind-muscle connection. People always use that term, but think about, like, you know, proprioception, think about where your body parts are. And as you're moving, if you're trying a pistol, at what point does your strength give out? When do you fall over?
Yeah.
If you're trying the side to side squats, can you get into position, but then you fall backwards? Mm-hmm. Those things will give you clues as to where you're weak and what you need to work on. And so there's a little bit of, you know, as you practice it, you learn that stuff. But I definitely think that bodyweight strength training like this can help you identify areas where you happen to be weak, either in mobility or strength.
Mm-hmm. And for anyone who's going to listen to this and go try it, I'm telling you right now, this is coming from like a gym OG, man. It is humbling. It is very, very humbling. So what I wanted to talk about a little bit was some of the more practical elements, right? Because there'll be people listening to this who are like, okay, like these two guys are both, you know, buff fitness guys, right? What should I do, right? What can I do?
Right.
So for someone who's, let's start with someone who's a beginner, right? Someone who's not in great shape, maybe just goes to the gym very casually, hasn't been training for that long. What sort of exercises or program would you recommend for them, especially during this time?
Okay, so when you are new to training or just deconditioned in general, the thing to remember is that when you are training with your body, there is no real way for most things to isolate. And so what I mean by that is a lot of people, and I think it's to their detriment, a lot of people when they're new, they go to the gym and what they'll do is they'll do a lot of bicep curls, they'll do a lot of tricep pull downs, they'll do all these, you know, leg extension and hamstring curl. And so think about sitting on these machines that isolate one joint and you're doing these single joint movements. There's nothing wrong with that. They still do stimulate, you know, strength adaptation. They do still stimulate hypertrophy. But what happens is if you spend 10 minutes doing bicep curls, then majority of the work was done by the biceps. I mean, you spent a lot of time to train a very small percentage of the musculature. Mm-hmm. You really need overall general physical preparedness. You need to strengthen everything.
Yeah.
And so you're much better off to invest your time doing compound multi-joint movements. So thinking a squat, mm-hmm. a bench press. But for newer trainees, when you do a bench press, you are still able to remove much of the body's kinetic chain. You're able to disengage a lot of the musculature, especially if mm-hmm. you don't really know how to do it. Mm-hmm. And so you're sitting there and you're, for lack of a better word, isolating the chest. When you do a push-up, you're holding a plank.
Yeah.
And so what's happening in a push-up, and the reason some beginners and a lot of some females, some men, they can't perform a push-up, which is fine. Everybody starts somewhere. But the reason they can't perform a push-up is not for lack of pressing strength. A lot of times it's because their core is too weak. They can't hold that plank and move throughout that movement pattern. Mm-hmm. So what I like about bodyweight training, especially for people that are newer, is you really need to build strength from head to toe.
Yes.
And when you are performing these movements, there is no other option. You can't do a push-up if you can't do a plank adequately. Mm-hmm. And so I think really push-ups are a very good starting point from as far as pressing goes. And the thing to remember is whenever you are pressing, it's a good idea to offset that with an equal amount of pulling.
Yes.
And so one of the things I see on like Twitter, for example, is people are like, we're on lockdown. I'm doing 100 push-ups a day. And that's great. And definitely physical activity, any physical activity is great.
Yeah.
But if you were to do push-ups every day for a prolonged period and you never do any pulling, you're probably going to end up with muscular imbalances and shoulder pain and a bad posture. Mm-hmm. And so what you want to think is, okay, if I'm pushing, I also need to do some pull. The problem is, a lot of people can't do pull-ups. You've got to work up to it. Mm-hmm. Or maybe right now they have zero equipment.
Yes.
And so they don't have a pull-up bar in the first place. They don't have gymnastics rings. And so you can utilize a table to do rows. I've not posted that just because I'm hesitant that someone will do it wrong and drop a table on their face.
Okay.
How do you do
rows with a table?
If you have a sturdy table and you move the chairs out, and then you would basically get underneath of the table and grab the edge of the table. And so you're laying almost parallel to the floor and the table and with your feet on the ground.
Gotcha.
And as long as the table's sturdy enough to hold you, you're pulling on the edge of the table and rowing yourself up to the table. Mm. A safer alternative. I've not had anybody get hurt doing that, but I just, you know, you got to have some common sense and test your table and make sure
table.
It's.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I just, but what you can do is, I have a video on my YouTube that basically says no pull-up bar, no problem. Mm-hmm. And it shows you how to utilize any doorway. And so if you can imagine you step into the doorway like you're going to walk through it, then you turn 90 degrees and stare at the door frame. And then you grab the door frame usually is going to have some molding around it. Mm-hmm. And so you would grab the molding. And if you imagine tug of war, if you've ever played tug of war and you're pulling on the rope and the people on the other side are pulling on the rope, nobody's moving, but you're rowing with the rope against each other. Mm-hmm. And so what you would do is stand in a door frame and grab a hold of the door frame and pull by pushing down with your legs, just like you're pulling on the door frame playing tug of war. And then you would just slowly, basically you would slowly row yourself up to the door frame and back, which I demo it in that YouTube video, but that's probably the best way to row for anybody anywhere in the world with no equipment. All you need is a door frame, which I'm assuming if you're on lockdown, you got a door frame.
Yeah.
So I think for a beginner,
you can also do it with like a pole or a post as well, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. You can grab a hold. If you got a tree, a tree that you can wrap your arms around, a pole, a post, if you, and I think in the video I demonstrated on a post, but if you do a basically pressing, you can start with push-ups. That's going to train the anterior core, the front of the body. Mm-hmm. If you are not strong enough to do push-ups, you can start with push-ups against a wall. Mm-hmm. And that way you're not working against gravity. The problem with push-ups, if you're very overweight relative to your muscle mass and fat. So meaning like if you have a poor power to weight ratio and if you weigh 250 or 200 pounds even, but you don't have much muscle, you're pressing a lot more weight as a percentage of body weight than somebody who's got more muscle and less fat, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
So what happens is you can do standing push-ups against the wall. As you start to build strength, you keep moving your feet back. So you're pressing yourself into the wall a little bit harder. Mm-hmm. Then eventually you can take your hands and elevate them on a sofa or a table. And now you are scaling to a little bit more difficult of a push-up. And then you would build strength there, then eventually to the floor. Mm-hmm. So, and again, I demonstrate that on my YouTube as well, but that's where you could basically take someone, no matter what level they're at, and start them with very, very beginner basic push-ups. Then with rows, because you're not working against gravity, it doesn't matter how much you weigh, you could do those standing rows. And then body weight squats, that's where you would start for lower body. No matter how overweight you are, the lower body's more powerful than the upper body.
Yeah.
And everybody should be able to do squats. If you have very poor mobility in the hips, you might start by doing squats onto a chair. So if you're listening to this and you're like, man, I've never exercised in my life, I'm super out of shape.
Yeah.
You can take a low chair and it'd be similar to a box squat, which I'm sure you're familiar with. Mm-hmm. And basically you would just lower yourself into the chair. And as soon as your butt kisses the chair, you come back up. But this way, if you were to fall backwards, you don't fall over and hurt yourself.
Sure.
So, but for the average person, push-ups, rows, and squats, just those three things will build a nice base of strength and conditioning. Mm. And then you can always expand and add to that. But those are the three that I think are like the minimum that awesome. I would do.
And yeah, I recommend everybody. It's not often that I shout out specific YouTube channels, but I massively recommend Jerry's channel because I have learned a lot from it. Like I said, I could be considered a fitness expert in my own regard, right? I have my own fitness book, which has sold a lot of copies. I'm always giving people fitness advice, but I've already learned a lot from Jerry's channel. Like I said, I don't normally do huge amounts of body weight training. When I do, it's like, you know, the basic stuff, push-ups, pull-ups, planks, body weight squats occasionally and stuff like that. But I've seen some stuff on there and just learned a whole bunch of new exercises already. So I'm going to actively promote Jerry's YouTube channel. I've actually already sent it to multiple people.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man.
That's all blessed, man. So moving on then. So for someone who's a little bit more intermediate, okay? So someone who's been, you know, maybe going to the gym for a couple of years, you know, maybe, you know, got some good strength on them, made some good gains. But again, maybe like myself, just isn't really that great at body weight training. You know, they can do body weight squats, they can do push-ups, but that stuff's a little bit too simple and a little bit too
right.
easy for them, unless they're going to just go for endurance. What would you recommend for them?
Basically, I have a intermediate workout that's 8 movements on the YouTube, like, you know, demonstrate the full workout. Mm-hmm. And that's really designed to go from head to toe. And, you know, the thing that you would be doing in the gym, generally people are going to have a horizontal row and they're going to have a vertical row. So, you know, you figure your pull-ups, that's like your vertical row. Your horizontal row is whether somebody likes to do bent over barbell rows or whether you like to do one arm dumbbell rows. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of, so people, when they're thinking the gym, I basically took most training programs in a traditional gym and thought, how do I make the equivalent in body weight strength training? And the easiest way to do that is if you have a set of gymnastics rings. So if you are stuck at home and you want to do a more advanced training sessions, then I would definitely recommend picking up a set of gymnastics rings and hang them from something that can support your weight, be it a pull-up bar in the doorway. Mm-hmm. And I've had a lot of people do that. It's perfectly safe. You can get a doorway pull-up bar. You can hang gymnastics rings from it. But rings will allow you to get a much closer to a one-to-one transition from a traditional weighted movement to a body weight movement. And the reason I mention that is, for example, with rows, if you have some gymnastics rings, or you could do it with a bar. Mm-hmm. So if you have like a rack at home and you have a barbell, you can adjust, you could row on the barbell. But if you have rings, what happens is you can do, you're able, just like a dumbbell, you're able to go neutral grip. You're able to move your grip into whatever position's more most comfortable for you. So you can do one arm ring rows. So if you imagine laying parallel to the ground and you're going to perform body weight rows, mm-hmm. you may be able to do quite a few and not get the same intensity relative to what you could do with a loaded barbell at a gym. But as soon as you take that to one arm, it now becomes much, much more difficult. Whatever it is that you weigh, you know, a large percentage of that's being pulled by that single arm on the upper body. And so you're able to transition into a very intense row. At the same time with rings, you can do dips, which are more difficult, especially on rings. The rings are an unstable surface, so you have to incorporate stability. And what happens is, once you get on rings, you can do dips. But if you have a lot of upper body pressing strength, you can do wide, or what are called Bulgarian dips. And those would be very similar. So I've had guys reach out that, especially since this lockdown started, and they're like, man, I'm a 315 bencher. You know, I'm trying to target failing 8 to 12 reps.
Yeah.
And if you do wide dips on a set of gymnastics rings, most guys that are strong will fail at 8 to 12, and you'll have just a ridiculous pump that will remind you of how it would feel to get up after a set of heavy bench.
Okay.
So if you're not a beginner and you're more intermediate, I highly suggest getting a set of rings, just because that opens up a whole nother, world of upper body strength that you will be able to perform that you just can't do without the rings. Yeah. So that would be the biggest thing. And the rings are like $20 to $30, depending if you want to buy plastic or wood. Mm-hmm. So they're dirt cheap. Okay. I mean, for the price, you can't really beat it. And so then once you have rings, the nice thing is that's all the equipment that you would need to scale from intermediate all the way to very advanced. Mm-hmm. Now at the intermediate level, provided you have some rings or something to row on, then like I just mentioned, your body weight rows, and you can scale the difficulty of those rows to match your current ability level. You've got your dips. And again, you can scale those dips to match your current ability level. Mm-hmm. Pull-ups. And then you've got your body weight squats. You're going to want to start transitioning into, you know, single leg work. And that can be assisted pistol squats, mm-hmm. which, if you imagine doing your pistol squats in a doorway,
yeah.
and you can reach your arms out and grab the sides of the doorway so that you don't fall over.
Yeah,
exactly. anybody should be able to do them, because you can fully spot yourself.
Yeah.
But even then, they're not easy.
Not easy, even
spotting yourself.
Yeah.
So assisted pistol squats, and then your Cossack, or your side to side squats, which most people, some people call them lateral squats. Mm-hmm. If you see a video of me, you'll think, oh, okay, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And so what you're basically doing is just squatting, you know, to either the left or the right, where one leg is going down. You know, you're actually pressing with one leg while the other leg is straight out to the side. Mm-hmm. Much easier to see in a video, but
yeah, but
basically your side to side squats and your assisted pistol squats will be the base for lower body training. Mm-hmm. And then the thing about body weight strength training that is missing from traditional training, I think, that is important, is having some kind of loaded hip hinge.
Okay.
And you know, you can't deadlift. Deadlifting is picking something heavy off the ground.
Sure.
And if you're body weight strength training, we have to basically work against gravity or leverage. You can't pick stuff up off the ground, because that's just not what we're doing, right? There is no substitute. So what you have is a pseudo hip hinge, which is basically a hip thrust. And if you're listening, you may have seen people do this, where you put your back onto like a bench or a chair, and then you take a barbell and put it across your waist, and mm-hmm. you thrust the waist up and you do it weighted. Mm-hmm. And so it's the exact same movement pattern if you just Google hip thrust. But the difference is, because we don't have a barbell, you, if you're new, if you're a beginner, you would do them with both legs down, and they will basically, they will effectively train the glutes and the hamstrings, but you just do them on one leg. And so by lifting up one leg, it increases the intensity quite a bit. If you're more intermediate and you can't deadlift right now, then what you can do is you can do the glute thrust single leg, mm-hmm. and it'll help keep you performing a hip hinge. Now, you're not going to increase your deadlift right now, you know, obviously. but if you, if you're not doing a hip hinge at all, chances are you're going to backslide on your deadlift. Mm-hmm. And so if you are at least adding in the single leg hip thrust, then you can maintain where you're at in your deadlift and hopefully not lose, you know, the progress that you had when you quit going to the gym.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would say
maybe someone might, I mean, someone like myself, I don't know. I wouldn't be shocked if I sort of went back to the gym, assuming I keep up with the, well, I'm not assuming I'm going to keep up with the body weight training I'm doing, but if I can, I feel like if I can not master, but at least get the hang of some of these movements, I myself, assuming we're not locked down for too long, I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, I actually find myself getting, being stronger on certain things just from having such a, you know, because after a certain amount of training, especially doing a type of training, you know, you level out, you sort of flatline. Like I'm not going to get, my deadlift isn't going to get much stronger. You know, there's not that much room.
My
bench isn't going to get that much stronger, right? Like there's not that much room. There's just not that much room to grow. But I feel like with incorporating some of these movements, it's like, oh, okay, well, if I can get the hang of that, it may address those weak links that may now allow me to take those things to another level.
Well, that, and actually you bring up a good point, because one of the things that I had a lot of low back pain and some issues cropping up before I started doing this style of training. Mm-hmm. And I don't credit necessarily this style of training for getting me past those issues. But what this did do is, like I mentioned earlier, it revealed a lot of weaknesses I had that I didn't know that I had. And one of the biggest ones was I had low back pain and I couldn't figure out where it was coming from. And after a whole bunch of troubleshooting and reading, I realized, hey, my glute medius is not as strong as it should be relative to the rest of my lower body musculature.
Okay.
And so I started doing a lot of abductions and like clamshells. Mm-hmm. And I think especially women listening to this, on average, if they work out, you probably don't have this problem, because generally women tend to focus on the lower body to a higher degree than most guys do.
Definitely.
And I know this isn't always the case, but this in my observation, you know, women are like, they want the booty, they want the legs.
Yeah.
And guys are like trying not to work legs if they don't have to.
It's true. It sounds cliche, but it is true.
Yeah. And so, I squatted, I deadlifted and all this, but you know, I did walking lunges and whatever else. But I realized, man, I don't do a lot of lateral strength. Mm-hmm. You know, everything's training front to back, what's called like sagittal plane training. Think about squatting. You're facing forward. You're walking lunges. You're walking forward. Everything's forward. And then I realized, man, so your glute medius is responsible for moving the leg away from the body. It controls your gait when you walk and run. Mm-hmm. But it like hit me all of a sudden. I'm like, man, I've neglected this thing forever.
Yeah.
And so then when I started focusing on it, I started to have less and less low back pain, and now I don't have any.
Interesting.
But the reason I mention that is because in athletes, increasing your, if your glute medius is behind relative to the rest of the musculature in the lower body, if you address it, you actually will get stronger. Mm. Your squat will probably go up and your deadlift will probably go up. So
I may have that issue.
Yeah. So it's just something, if you're listening and you're thinking, okay, what am I going to work on until I can get back to the gym? Mm-hmm. Like Google glute medius, and you can Google different exercises for it. And I have one on my YouTube channel. I have a playlist for glutes specifically that you don't need any equipment for, but definitely figure out some way to target the glute medius and strengthen it, because it is one of the muscles that you can work that will probably be a weakness for a lot of people, mm-hmm. that will translate into being better at your other lifts when you do get back to it.
Awesome. And the machine in the gym that does train it, it's 98% only used by women. And
the slang term for it, I'm not trying to offend anybody. But
I know.
It's called the good girl, bad girl machine. That's what guys call it, right? because they have two machines. And so if you're listening to this, like you'll understand. There's two machines, and when you sit on it, there's pads that go on the outside of the thighs, or outside of the quads, I mean. And you open up your legs and you're pressing out, right? And that's going to strengthen the glute medius. Mm-hmm. And then they have the other one where you start with your legs open, and the weight, the pads are against the thighs, and you squeeze them together. And you're right. You will see women on those things religiously.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And guys will just walk by and look at them, and they don't want to get on there.
it's funny.
But those things, if you're a guy and when a gym opens back up, you probably should get on those. Like, who cares? You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it's interesting because, you know, human beings are funny, and it's like you can't overlook these sort of psychological patterns because it's as hard to get a guy to do some of those exercises as it is to get a woman to do like a shoulder press or to get under a bench or something. You know, it's just, there's this weird, I don't know, fear or concern or just kind of like, nah, that's just not for me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'll be honest. Like I do use that.
One's adduction and one's abduction.
Yeah. Like I do use that from time to time, but when I'm on it, part of me is like, why am I doing this? You know?
It's one of those exercises that it's like, you don't do it because you enjoy it, but you do it because it's a necessary evil kind of. Like the version I have is basically a body weight clamshell. You're pressing yourself up off the floor with the glute medius. But when I was trying to think to myself, okay, how am I going to address this, you know, with just body weight? And then I tried different movements and I'm like, okay, this feels the best. But I'm sitting there in my head, and I'm like, man, this is like Jane Fonda, you know, if you know who that is. Yeah. but it's like, at the end of the day, it's necessary. Of course. Definitely. I think we all have these preconceived notions of what is, you know, quote unquote manly. Yeah. And like you mentioned with women too, a lot of times they're hesitant to perform certain things. I think now, especially, it's probably one of the good things about CrossFit. Weight training in general is much more mainstream. It's not just a bodybuilding thing anymore. It's not, you know. So I think that's very good that happened. But there's a recent study that came out, and I'll tweet it so people can go check it out if they want to see it. But they looked at women and men, and they concluded that, like, you know, basically there's no difference in how they should train. And a lot of times, you know, women will think, well, what about for a woman? How should I be training as a woman? Yeah. And your musculature is almost, I mean, we're human. It's very hormonal differences. But other than that, there's not a difference, you know? And so I think that's one of the hardest things for men and women to kind of get across is like, you don't really train differently.
Yeah.
For different goals and different sports, certainly you would train differently.
Yeah.
But, you know, a female sprinter is not training different than a male sprinter.
No. I think it tends to be, you know, men and women want to accentuate different body parts, right? And it's funny, man. It is funny when you think of it. Like, a lot of this stuff does just boil down to like a very primal human, you know, like, you know, sort of like the whole mating psychology, right? As a guy, like, you talk to a guy who wants to start going to the gym. Okay, like, what do you want? Yeah, I want like my arms to be bigger. I want my shoulders to be wider. Right? Oh yeah, I want a six pack. I want my chest to be big. Like, you don't have a guy who's like, yeah, like my glutes and my hamstring. It just doesn't happen, right? But then you talk
to him
and it's like, yeah, you know, like my I want like my bum, like I want my tummy to be a bit flatter. I want like, you know, my bum to be like this. You know, a girl's not going to come and be like, yeah, you know, I want bigger shoulders. I want my arms to be. I just find stuff like that funny because some people might listen, and if someone's like super PC, they might think like, oh, that sounds sexist, or that sounds like, and it's like, look, that's just reality. It's a generalization, but it's 95. I'd probably say it's like 95%.
Yeah.
95% of cases.
The thing is, like, I think that you have different patterns that just people in general tend to gravitate toward.
Yeah.
And, you know, whether it's evolutionary or like you mentioned, maybe it's driven by attracting a maid or whatever the case is.
Yeah, definitely.
But there's always exceptions, and that, like, if you're the exception, that's great. I don't care.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, but people, like, whole other topic, but people tend to get offended when you say something, or not you, but just in general, when you say something like, oh, guys tend to not want to use this machine, or girls tend to like this.
It's just true.
Clearly there's exceptions to the rule. Like, if you're the exception, awesome. Nobody cares. You know what I mean? Like, it's not a big deal, but there's definitely, I think it's probably important to point out too. So if you're listening and you're like, man, these guys talking about working out, I don't really care. there's a narcissistic side to it where, you know, you're working out because you want to look better. And that there's nothing wrong with, if you go get your hair done, if you're a woman and you do your nails and get your hair done, but then you're like, oh, working out's just another tool. Exercise is just another tool to help improve your appearance if that's important to you. But that's not the only or even primary reason why you should physically train. And the thing is, when you look at research, physical activity is very strongly correlated to human longevity. So even if you don't give a shit at all what you look like, you should still exercise. It's not about, and so while vanity is one reason, that's not the only reason, right? So I always like to point out to people, because I have people that will ask me like, well, I don't really care what I look like, so why should I exercise? And I think, okay, when you have, and it maybe you're only 30 years old, but you know, I'm assuming that whatever it is that you like to do in life today, you want to still be able to do when you're 50 and 60 and 70.
Yeah.
And the thing is, once you, somewhere around 40, you start to lose muscle mass annually.
Yes.
And so if you don't insert some physical activity and some resistance training, you're going to lose muscle mass, which becomes an issue, because that then you start to become weaker every year and you start to become less of a, you know, less of a member of our species that's able to endure hardship.
Yes.
The stronger that you are, the more muscle mass that you have, to an extent. I'm not talking about bodybuilding or being massive.
You don't need to go
right?
to an extreme, yeah, of course.
No. But just the more muscle mass that you can preserve and even build as you age, the better you're able to withstand. Just think about if you get in a car accident. If you and I are driving, not you, you're pretty well built, but if two people are driving and they hit each other in a head-on collision, chances are there's going to be some catastrophic injury.
Yes.
But if you have a stronger body than the other person, the other person's 45 years old, 50 years old, and they've not taken care of themselves, they're less well able to endure physical trauma, be it from like a car accident or, you know, God forbid you get cancer or you something like that happens. The weaker your body is, I mean, you can actually look at this virus right now. People in a weaker physical state are more likely to have a more serious, you know, adverse reaction.
Yeah.
And so I try to let people know my primary goal is to help people get physically training. If they graduate and go on to train at a regular gym, if they, whatever, I don't care. I just like people to be active, because I do think that from a health and longevity standpoint, it's hugely beneficial for a myriad reasons.
Everybody should do something. Everybody should exercise. Everyone should be, I'm not saying everyone should be a power lifter or everyone should be a bodybuilder or whatever, but everybody should do some physical exercise, and that should include resistance training as well. Like the benefits go way beyond the vanity. I mean, firstly, I mean, you were saying that people are saying they don't care what they look like. Firstly, I'm going to straight up say, I think you should care what you look like. Right. I even feel that most people who would say that would kind of be being in denial, right? There's no one who, if you could look a little bit better, like why wouldn't you want to? I'm not saying you can like, you know, let's change your face or something, but like, why wouldn't you want, it's like getting, like you mentioned getting a haircut. It's like, well, why not get a haircut or like wear a nice shirt?
And I think society, and it's been this way since, I mean, you can even look at, you know, ancient Egypt, society bases a lot of how it sees you, it bases a lot of it on appearance.
It does. It's just
so
reality.
I don't have a problem. If somebody says, hey, I don't care what I look like, that's cool. I mean, we're all free to be however you want to be.
Of course.
But there's actually research where they've looked at people who are more physically attractive, and all, like you mentioned, you can only do so much with your face. I mean, maybe you do like an upper body session, then a lower body session, then a face session. Don't forget to work face.
Exactly. Face day.
But new program dropping soon. But I do think that, you know, you do help stack the deck in your favor better. Even from a success standpoint, when you're talking about, you know, professional success and getting promoted, or you're talking about getting the job or whatever else, like people do judge you. It's, in a way, it's unfortunate that people judge you based on how you look, but I don't make the system. We all just live in it.
It just is. It just
and
is.
Right. And so it is what it is. And like, I understand there's always people wanting to better the system, change the system, and then that's awesome. But we've been prioritizing looks for 5,000 years. And so it's probably not going to change anytime soon. And so I do think that there are, and I have it all the time. People will start exercising, they'll start losing weight, they'll start eating better. They kind of go hand in hand. If you have a hard time with poor food choices, but you've never really exercised. Once you start getting consistent with exercise, it's physical work. And then you start doing this physical work. And so now you want to support that by eating better. Yeah. They kind of reinforce each other. But what happens is people start to lose weight and look better, and they start to feel better. They start to become more confident. And so it's definitely something where I think that you're not doing it for other people, but it will elevate how other people look at you, you know, in the long term. So I do think that, like, to your point, you should care how you look, not necessarily to impress other people, but because it will benefit your ability to further whatever your pursuits are in life.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it's the same reason why I think you should read books, right? You should you should learn how to have good conversations with people. You should learn how to listen. You should learn how to make eye contact with people. Not because you're necessarily trying to impress people. I mean, that could be the case, but just in terms of sort of maximizing your potential, or at least somewhat maximizing your potential as a human being, there are certain things that you should just do. Like, no one, you know, like, people brag about, like, oh, I don't go to the gym. I'd never go to the gym. I don't exercise, whatever. It's like, well, would you brag about, I mean, I guess some people do this, but they sound silly, right? Brag about not being educated, or brag about not reading books, or brag about not knowing how to learn a new skill. So it's like, why would you brag about that? Like, that's not a good trait. You know, I'd rather talk to and associate with and be friends with people who do read books, because they're going to be more interesting. They're going to have more knowledge on different subjects, right? Their brain is going to work in a different way. So yeah, I don't know. I'm big on people. I'm just big on self-improvement in general, right? None of us are perfect. We're never going to make ourselves perfect, but you may as well strive towards improving yourself.
Right. And I think if you look back at whether it's we were created or we evolved or whatever, technology has displaced our need to physically work. Like, if you go back 100 years and you're like, oh, I'm going to go work out, our great grandparents would have thought you're stupid, right? Because for the most part, unless you were wealthy, especially pre-industrial revolution, you had to do physical work every day just to survive, right? Yes. You had washing clothes by hand and walking everywhere and things like that. Even mounting a horse, right? You still have to climb up on the horse. So we're at a time and a point in history where there really is a need to be cognizant of adding physical work back into our daily lifestyles, because we don't have to do it anymore. Mm. And so, like with what you're saying, as far as self-improvement, I think there's the person who's going to start exercising and feel like drawn to it, and it becomes a big part of their life. But that doesn't have to be the average person. One resistance training session a week will present sarcopenia and basically age-related muscle wasting. So you could do one full body session a week, and that's enough.
Okay.
Twice a week's even better. Twice a week is solid for the average person. If you don't love training and you're like, man, that's just not me, I don't want to work out all the time, twice a week will do it. And so it's not a massive commitment. But I think that even if you're thinking about this from an intellectual standpoint, like, why should I physically train? Well, I mean, very simply, we evolved or were created or whatever to be physical.
Yeah.
And so you're just inserting the minimum to maintain yourself. And sometimes I'll talk to people that are very brilliant and they're like very resistant to exercise.
It's interesting, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing is, it can be endurance based work. You can go jog the dogs, you know, you can play tennis. It doesn't have to be like, oh, I'm going to go be a gym bro for 2 hours a week. It doesn't have to be that at all. But the other thing to remember is that there's research suggesting that as you exercise and you're physically active, gray matter within the brain increases, you know, your IQ is higher. If you're smart and you don't exercise and you start exercising, you will be smarter.
Yep.
So it's almost like if you need for your motivation to not be physical, if you need for your motivation to not be about your body, then let it be about your brain is housed inside your body. And so the physical training that you do is going to enhance your intellect, your mental edge. You know, you're going to have a mental edge that you didn't have if you don't exercise.
It's part of why I find the meathead stereotype really funny, because there's this idea that, you know, we live in some kind of role playing game. You know, you have to sacrifice like intelligence for strength, or like you only get a certain amount. You know, you've got 20 points, right? Like, create your character and you have to distribute them here. Okay, if you get too much strength, you lose in the intelligence, right? If you gain too much here, you lose. And it's like, in my own experience, I've mostly noticed the opposite of that, right? If I see someone, a man or a woman who's got like a great physique and is really into training or whatever. Majority of the time, of course, there are exceptions, right? But yeah, actually, yeah. I find it seems to positively correlate with someone being more interesting and certainly being more disciplined and just being more kind of just being having their stuff together, right? It's like a good sign that someone has their stuff together.
You don't have to choose to be either a mage or a barbarian. Right? Yeah. In fact, listen, go watch The Witcher and go watch The Witcher. Geralt uses magic and he will slay you with a sword. He can do both, right?
People always think it's one or the other. Some people are like, oh, I'd rather be smart. And I'm like, what do you mean rather? I'm not saying like pick one or the other. It's like you can be smart and strong and in shape.
Yeah, and the funny thing, this is, I think, a little bit interesting. I noticed that a lot of white collar, so like a lot of attorneys and doctors, they gravitate toward endurance sports, cycling and, you know, and that type of stuff, marathons, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then on the blue collar side, you'll see people that will have gravitated more towards like bodybuilding, weight training. And interestingly, all exercise increases, you know, BDNF, which is like brain derived neurotrophic factor, and helps with increasing neurological health. Mm-hmm. But that, I think, happens. There's some research that shows it's more on the endurance side where you get the highest amount of gray matter and that type of stuff. So I sometimes wonder if it's like that maybe has something to do with it. Like the all exercise gives you that endorphins, it gives you a rush, you feel good after you complete it. But I used to think, okay, I wonder if the white collar crowd is more drawn to the endurance sports because of the neurological benefit, potential neurological benefit. But then I started realizing, like, at least to me, endurance sports are very mental, not as physical. They're That's physically true. Demanding.
Yeah.
But so like if you go run 5 miles right now, the whole time you're running, your brain is saying like, what in the hell are you doing? Stop doing this. Right. You're like
mental endurance as well.
It really is a mental endurance activity. And when you go to lift, your set can suck, but it's only like 30 seconds of suck, right? And then you're going to have some type of rest period. And so I think that on the endurance side, because like for myself, I'll go run, like I ran my dog 3.5 miles the other day. Mm-hmm. And when I finished, I felt like I accomplished some great feat. Not that that's very far, but I was like, man, I put in work, right? Yeah. But when I finish a strength training session, I enjoy the session, but I don't feel like I did something great, if that makes sense. So I think that there is, like, I don't have a desire to run a marathon, but I feel like when you perform endurance work and you finish, there's a feeling of like, you had to tell yourself to not quit for a really long time.
That's true. That's
comparatively. True. And so, you know, I think for like, to what your point is, people that are really into endurance sports oftentimes don't strength train. And so where I'm kind of going with this is, if you are a runner, if you are a cyclist, it will improve your cycling, your running. They will get better if you also strength train. Mm-hmm. 1 to 2 days a week is all you need. But the other benefit to strength training, if you're an endurance athlete, is that it will help reduce your chances of getting injured.
Yes.
And so injury prevention is a big benefit there. So if you're the type of person that thinks, oh, I like to run, I already jog, I don't need to strength train, I highly encourage you to add a little bit of strength training.
And maybe to reduce some muscle wastage as well. You know.
Because what happens is, like you're right, the more that you endurance train, especially depending on how you eat and different factors, you can basically end up not looking very athletic, even though you are able to perform well. Mm-hmm. From muscle wasting, preventing injury. But I just found that interesting that and I don't know if you're the same way, but anytime I've done any type of endurance work, I get this sense of accomplishment that I don't get when I weight train. And so I feel like I kind of understand the people that I'm not going to run a marathon. I'll tell you that right now, but I can only imagine what it feels like to mentally overcome yourself for 4 hours or however long it takes to finish.
That's true.
And so I think that's what draws people to that versus weight training. And I think the people that struggle to enjoy resistance training, whether it's body weight or traditional weight training, I think the people that struggle with that is they don't have that same sense of this sucks, I want to quit, but I'm not going to let myself quit.
Gotcha.
And there's that sense of accomplishment that I find comes after endurance work that I don't get after weight training.
Awesome. I'm just looking at the time, man. I wanted to talk a little bit about nutrition, but I think we might have to save that for save that for another one, because that's a whole different topic. Because I know you eat mostly a carnivorous diet. Maybe you can give a couple minute overview of the way you eat and why you eat that way.
Yeah. So when I was younger, I ate higher carbohydrate, and when I was fat, I ate everything in sight. So that was, sure. But notwithstanding that time period, I've eaten high carb, low carb. I've been pescatarian, not vegetarian, but just about every other way. I love to self-experiment. Mm-hmm. And so what happened is I found that for me, eating on the lower carbohydrate end of the spectrum, I just feel better from a mental energy standpoint throughout the day.
Okay.
My wife's the exact opposite. She's not low carb at all. She's not overweight. She does fine eating plenty of carbs. Mm-hmm. And so I've never adhered to like a one size fits all approach to diet. I think you've got to find what works for you. But when I was already very low carbohydrate, I had tried ketogenic dieting, and I had basically GERD, and which is gastrointestinal reflux disease, and I had psoriasis. And when I would eat higher carbohydrate or any appreciable amount of grain, what would happen is my GERD, my acid reflux would act up, and I had psoriasis that was progressing independent of how I ate. But I was already researching different, you know, in the ketogenic circles, in the keto crowd, I guess you would call it. And I noticed the carnivore movement popping up. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was insane, because I'm like, dude, you're going to eat zero vegetables. This doesn't sound healthy at all. You know, you guys are crazy. But I kept seeing anecdotes of people that were getting relief to autoimmune conditions. Mm-hmm. By trying carnivore. And so I thought, okay, I know there are sensitivities to certain plant foods that people have. Maybe I've got an issue. So I decided to do a 30-day experiment and go carnivore to see what would happen. So I did that. And within the first month, my psoriasis was completely gone. My GERD was like 98% or so controlled.
Wow.
And so I stuck with that for like 7 months. And after 7 months, it never relapsed. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, okay, whatever was going on, there must have been either an overconsumption of, I was eating tons of spinach, tons of kale. Mm-hmm. Maybe there was some common, you know, thing inside of those foods that was aggravating my condition. So yeah. I decided to go ahead and titrate back in some plant foods. And so after 7 months, which was this last, how many months? About 4 months ago now, mm-hmm. was when I started reintroducing some plants. So fast forward to today, I'm still low carb, but I eat like onions, garlic, I'll eat cilantro, avocado, some green zucchini. So I basically added back in a few plant foods. And what I did is I did them 1 to 2 weeks at a time to make sure that my skin didn't react negatively to them.
Yeah.
So today I'm still low carb, but I'm not carnivore, not strict carnivore anymore.
Not as strict. Gotcha. So you don't eat any fruits or grains?
No, not right now. I mean, my daughter, well, actually, especially not on quarantine, but okay. I have a 14-year-old daughter, and once in a while she wants to go have sushi. I'll take her out and we'll go eat, just okay. Dad and me and her.
Yeah.
And so we'll go to the steakhouse 1 month, and the next month she'll want to go. And sometimes she chooses sushi, and then we just split 3 rolls.
Gotcha. So
and if I eat like that, the only thing that happens is I'll get a little acid reflux, but it's very rare that I eat like that, so it's not a big deal. It's kind of like I know going into it, okay, I'm going to have some acid reflux, but I haven't had my skin react negatively to the occasional meal like that. But when I was eating spinach and kale in very high amounts. I was buying a 3.5-pound bag of spinach at Costco every week. Okay. And I was eating probably 2 pounds of it. I'd end up having to throw some of it away, but I was eating a lot of spinach. And then there's different compounds in spinach and in kale and in those leafy greens that people with autoimmune conditions sometimes have a problem with. So I'm at least in my case, I'm thinking that was my issue, not eating small amounts of spinach, because I have for most of my life. Mm-hmm. But when I started really increasing the spinach and kale intake is when my skin started to act up.
That's interesting. That'll sound so counterintuitive to most people.
That's what happened to me. The reason I was like, man, I want to be healthy, so I'm going to really up my leafy greens.
Yeah.
Plants have these natural defenses. Like, you know, these different basically adaptations they've developed to prevent predation, to keep predators from eating them. Mm. And so in small amounts, I think for almost everybody, like I'm never going to be one of those people that you see online that's trying to convince you that plants are bad for humans.
Yeah.
Right. I don't think the data support that at all.
Yeah.
But we do have various sensitivities to foods depending on the individual. Mm-hmm. And so I do think there's something there from an autoimmune standpoint. So if you have an autoimmune condition and you're struggling to get it under control, you might experiment with an elimination diet, which that's what carnivore was for me. It was an elimination diet. It worked to, you know, take care of the two issues I was having. And then now I've been on the path of reintroducing food slowly to making sure they don't cause an issue. And so far, so good. But yeah, so I'm not carnivore anymore. I always try to be very upfront and open with people, yeah. Like, you know, and even then the dietary, if anybody's paid attention on social media, man, is as crazy as people get about diet. I don't talk about it a whole lot anymore anyways.
Yeah.
You know, just because I it's almost like politics. I don't talk about politics at all on Twitter.
I don't. Diet has become politics. Whenever I'm a Christian myself, but when I talk to certain atheists, I always, you know, make jokes about how so many people have just substitute. You know, other things have become religious for certain people. Sort of often in the absence of religion, right? It becomes their dietary habits. It becomes their political team. It becomes this. It becomes that. So it's just one of those random observations about society that I find kind of amusing, right? I've spoken to vegans. I've spoken to carnivores. I've spoken to the ones which are like hard line, you know, like really, you know, like going out trying to evangelize and convert people. That I'm like, okay, you know, like, but, like, you know, if it works for you, awesome. If that works for you, awesome. I don't. The whole one size fits all thing in either direction, logically and rationally and just nutritionally, it doesn't sound like that makes sense for everybody. Like if you think everybody should eat full carnivore, that doesn't really sound right to me. If you think everybody is going to thrive on a vegan diet, I'm like, I don't buy that either.
Well, the biggest thing for me, if you think about it, in a nutshell, the best way I could describe how I think people should eat is if you look at modern hunter-gatherer societies around the world. And so you're talking far northern Inuit, you're talking like, you know, African tribes that are still active hunter-gatherers, South America. Mm-hmm. These people eat anywhere from 30% of their calories will come from animal foods. Mm-hmm. All the, you know, closer to the equator where they have plant foods available pretty much all the time.
Yeah.
And then as you go into far northern hunter-gatherers, it could be up to 96-98% depending on the season. Mm-hmm. Where it's animal foods.
Yeah.
And so the common thread to me with all these hunter-gatherers is that they are all eating whole nutritious food, mm-hmm. right? That's like the foundation of their diet. And even though there's a huge range in how much plant and animal foods they all eat plant and animal foods. Mm-hmm. And so if I'm talking like on a broad spectrum, I think if somebody eats almost all plants and they eat a small amount of animal foods, mm-hmm. they can probably be healthy.
Sure.
If somebody eats mostly animal foods and a small amount of plants, they're probably still going to be healthy because they're sure. eating whole foods. And the other side of it is they're not chronically over consuming dietary energy. Mm-hmm. That's the biggest lever to me is if you chronically overeat, even if it's healthy food, yep. it doesn't matter. You're chronically overeating.
You're going to gain weight.
And yeah, so that's the biggest issue. And so even when I was going through my strict carnivore looking to treat autoimmune, yeah, I'm a low carb advocate from the standpoint that I think it's a viable way to eat. It seems like just like you have atheists that get mad at people for being Christian. Like, first of all, why do you care if somebody's Christian? Like,
yeah.
If you want to be atheist, cool. I don't care. If you want to be Christian, awesome. Like that's awesome. Who cares? I've always never understood the atheists that get real bothered when you're Christian and that come after you. And it's like, dude,
I've had that a lot.
Yeah, it makes no sense. And so, at the same time, I would say I'm a low carb advocate because that's how I feel best.
Yes.
But I also don't think that's how anyone else has to or should eat. I think people should, I'll give an example like religion. Mm-hmm. I think that if you feel called to Christ, you feel called to God, then that's what you should worship. Like that's what you're called to, you know. So when it comes to food, if you feel good eating higher carbohydrate diet, man, have at it. Why am I going to tell you that you're wrong?
No.
You know what I mean? And so there's a lot of mainstream, there are mainstream, there's even, you know, people who are credentialed, who are prominent, and it's like, they're really anti-low carb. And I'm like, dude, if it works for people, let them.
Like, you know, in the words of Jay-Z, I'll translate slightly to not be profane. You know, what you eat doesn't make me poop. Right, like very literally in this case,
in Western societies especially, our poor health is a massive drain economically on healthcare. Like it's an issue. Like I just think as people, we kind of owe it to one another to just try to be healthy, responsible citizenry, right? Like you don't have to be an athlete. You don't have to be obsessive about food. But if we were all just 100 years ago healthy, think about how much more money there would be to put toward things that are a better use of resources. So I definitely think that we should all be conscious of
our health. And if you live in a country that has universal healthcare, such as the UK, or you are someone who advocates for it somewhere where, you know, it's not totally there, like in the USA, then actually you should also be beating this same drum. I saw the other day, I can't remember the number, but how many billions of pounds that obesity costs the NHS every year.
Right.
And, you know, that is avoidable, right? If people did take that personal responsibility just to not get gigantically overweight, then, you know, actually do it for yourself. Of course, do it for yourself, do it for your family. But for the wider society, in the UK anyway, people can't even make that excuse that, oh, it has no impact on other people, because it quite literally actually does. But yeah, you know, I think that's a whole nother road we can go down. It's been awesome talking to you, man. I know we can talk forever. I'll definitely have you back on the podcast in the future. Thank you so much for coming on. I think the workout advice and nutrition advice that you've put out here is really going to help a lot of people, especially at this time. And yeah, man, thank you.
I am the man, sick with the slang, sick and I'm destined for fame. Do for the fam, not for the gram, stunt me, you're destined for pain. I do not front, I do not scam, put some respect on my name. Sick like Cobain, click and I bang, y'all gon' remember the name. Y'all gon' remember the name.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.